Okay, let's begin. So the topic for the shiur this afternoon is Tfilas Nachem, the prayer we insert into our davening on Tisha B'Av. I had so much fun preparing the shiur that I felt like I wasn't mekayim the mitzvah of Tisha B'Av in the right way. But it's a good problem to have, and it's all getting deep into the nature of the recognition of the importance of the Beis HaMikdash. So I want to just give a brief introduction. On any special occasion on the Jewish calendar, we tailor our prayers, we tailor the tefillah to recognize, to mention, to try to capture the nature of the day that we are commemorating. In halacha, that's called Haskaras Me'ein HaMa'ora. You're mentioning the occasion in the tefillah. Okay, we have a few examples of this that the Gemara speaks about, most of them not related to Tisha B'Av. Can anybody think of some examples where we have a special mention of our tefillos, of the occasion in our tefillah? Chanukah is an example. The Gemara talks about that in Shabbos, Daf Chaf Dalid, Al Anisim, to mention Chanukah and Purim. That's one example. Other examples, Yalv Yavo, on Rosh Chodesh, on Yom Tovim, Chol HaMoed at least. So we mention Yalav Yavo to give recognition to the nature of the day. On Aseres Mitzvah, we do Hamelech HaKadosh, Hamelech HaMishpat. We add in a few things into our Shemoneh Esrei also to recognize the special occasion of the year. And that kind of gets morphed into the very text of the tefillah itself. So for example, most people think, for many of these, if you were to forget them, you might have to repeat Shemoneh Esrei because you didn't say the proper Shemoneh Esrei for the occasion. Okay, that's the idea of Haskaras Me'ein HaMa'ora. Now, when it comes to Tisha B'Av, the Talmud Bavli itself doesn't tell us that we have to mention something special in our davening to recognize Tisha B'Av, but the Yushalmi in the fourth parak of Brachos does. It talks about how on every communal fast day you should say Tfilas Anenu. That's for communal fast days. But in addition to that, and the Yushalmi calls that this idea of Haskaras Me'ein HaMa'ora, giving recognition to the day. But then the Yushalmi continues and it says on Tisha B'Av, there's a special principle to recognize the morning of the Beis HaMikdash. And so we have a tefillah of Nachem. That's what we say only on Mincha of Tisha B'Av. I'll talk about that in a second. But that's mentioned explicitly in the Yushalmi. I'll just read it here. I have it on page 2 of the source sheet. B'Tisha B'Av, Yachid Sarich Lahazkir Me'ein HaMa'ora. Mahu Omer. So the Yushalmi has a slightly different girsa. It doesn't have Nachem. It doesn't say console us. It says Rachem Hashem Elokeinu. Have mercy on us. And this is important for later in the shir. The text actually differs slightly from the text that we have. That's not uncommon. That, you know, the tefillos, you know, kind of evolved a little bit through Ashkenazim, Svardim. So the Yushalmi's text is a little different than ours. But the Yushalmi definitely has. And the Yushalmi says, where should we insert this into our tefillos? So if you don't remember from Mincha, or if you didn't daven Mincha yet, where would you think you should insert the recognition of Nachem, console us for the destruction of Yushalayim? Where should you insert that into tefillah? So Bonei Yushalayim, that's where we have it. Because the tefillah is about Yushalayim, Yircha Baracha Mim Tashuv, bring us back to the city of Jerusalem. So in that tefillah, we insert Nachem. The truth is, the Yushalmi doesn't have it there. The Yushalmi says you should put it, what's your runner-up? Where? In the bracha of Avoda. So that's later on in Sechazena, Inenu, B'Shuvcha, Litzion, Barachamim. It's more about the Avoda of the Karbanos. So the Yushalmi says you should mention it in the Avoda, but it's an interesting example where our practice diverges from what is, the source is in the Yushalmi. The Yushalmi says say it at the end of Shemoneh Esrei in the bracha of the Avoda. And we just don't do that because we think it's more appropriate to say it in Levil Yushalayim, Ercha Brachim and Tashir. What? That's what the Rishonim. So Al Anisim is in Hodah at the end. Yeah, Al Yav was also there at the end. True. So it's a little, but you could see why it makes sense to insert it into Yushalayim, Ercha Brachim and Tashir. Yeah. So actually, the Rav very nicely in the back of this kinos for Tisha B'Av, the Rav says that this machlokas is a conceptual disagreement about what we're mourning on Tisha B'Av. I want to come back to this point. Is the focus of the mourning on the loss of the ritual service in the Beis HaMikdash, the Avodah? That maybe is the Yushalmi's view. That's what's front and center in what we're commemorating today. Or are we commemorating the loss of Yerushalayim, which is V'Yerushalayim Yircha B'Rachamim Tashu, V'Sishkom B'Socha Kasher Divarto, V'Nei Osa B'Kara B'Yamina B'Nan Ola, M'Chisei David Avdecha Meher L'Socha Sachin. So notice that in that tefillah, there's no mention of the sacrifices. We're speaking about Yerushalayim as the Kisei David Avdecha, the seat of the Davidic monarchy. So it almost seems to have political significance or social significance, unrelated to the Avoda significance. So the Rav says very nicely, maybe this is like a tension about where you should say Nachim. That's a debate about the nature of Tisha B'Av. And that's going to be at the center of the shir a little later on. If I took your temperature right now and I asked you, what are we mourning on Tisha B'Av? Is it the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash? Or is it the desolation, Yerushalayim being laid waste? I mean, who's in favor of the Beis HaMikdash? High hands higher. Let's just get one's... Okay, basically, and who's Yerushalayim? Sounds like majority is Yerushalayim side here. So it's interesting. I spent a little time, whenever I'm preparing for a shiur, I always run out of time. The problem with giving a shiur at the end of the day is that the whole day becomes shiur prep, and then, you know, there's never enough time. And David, I didn't get to listen to the other thing yet, because even the whole day was, yeah. So it's actually interesting. I ran out of time, but if you read through Eicha, if you reread through Eicha, and you reread through much of the kinos, it appears to me, from the kind of hour or so that I spent re-flipping through everything this afternoon, just on this issue, the emphasis is much more on Yerushalayim, and the destruction of the city, the harm to the citizens, the disgrace amongst nations, than it is on like the Beis HaMikdash. I think it's true in Eicha itself. We'll look at a few psukim, but it seems to be true also of the kinos. That works nicely with actually our practice of reciting Nachim in the bracha of Bonei Yerushalayim, rebuilding Yerushalayim, drawing attention to that as the locus for what we're commemorating on Tisha B'Av. So I want to come back to that. Obviously, a move you can make here is to say that those two concepts are not so easily separable from each other. The Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim, we'll come to that at the end of this year. But at least prima facie, on the surface, I just want to emphasize this distinction between...
But also, our text of
Nachim
is very...
Yeah, so we could look at the text of Nachim in a second. I think the text of Nachim screams out Yerushalayim characteristics. We'll talk about that also, which works nicely with it being in the Yerushalayim Yircha B'Rachamim Tashu. Okay. Now, just a general note, I want to zoom out for a second before we zoom back into Nachim. I mentioned this idea that we always give recognition to the special occasion that we're commemorating, celebrating, mourning, Haskaras Me'enam Ora. So I just want to give a few other examples in Tisha B'Av itself, not just reciting Nachim, but a few other examples where we give recognition to the day, there's a debate about it. You'll notice in our tefillos, we don't say Kaddish Tiskabel. So we just cut out the line of Tiskabel. That's why there was almost murder last night during Maariv when the Shliach Tzibar mentioned Tiskabel Tulason. So because we don't say that because we almost feel wrong asking Hashem to accept our tefillos with Ratzon on a day of mourning when we feel like we're not worthy of it. That's why in a house of mourning also you don't say Tiskabel Tulason. There's controversy about it, but that's where the debate comes from. Another example, we don't do this. As we get a little more mature as an institution, it's a lot to think about. But I think historically it was the case that Shiras Hayam, Az Yashir, wasn't part of Psukei Dezimra. The Gaonim didn't have it. The Rambam says some communities have the practice to say it. The Ashkenazim, like Rashi and Machzor Vitri, and then later the Sefer HaManig, both Rashi early medieval and the Sefer HaManig about a century and a half later, so they say, hey, there's this custom to recite Shiras Hayam, Az Yashir, every day, Shabbos morning. What a great way to give recognition to the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf. But even the communities that do say this don't say it on Tisha B'Av. Because on Shiras Hayam, we're celebrating our victory over our enemies. That's what it's about. And Tisha B'Av is the day that we're vulnerable. It's not a day that we could have our heads up high in confidence to celebrate victory. So the custom was not to say Shir HaSayam on Tisha B'Av. File it away. I think it's a good minute. When we bring back Birchas Kohanim, at the same time, we're going to take out Oz Yashir. And I felt strange. I really felt strange saying, once you know this Shita, you feel strange saying Oz Yashir Moshe B'nei Yisrael on Tisha B'Av, like we're celebrating our victory. And this is like the day when we were devastated. So that's another example where historically the tefillah reflected the nature of the day, but they didn't say Oz Yashir. And just one other example is that if you noticed in Shacharis, we didn't say Birchas Kohanim in the morning. There's a major debate whether you should say Birchas Kohanim Barchinu B'Bracha Hamshalashas at Mincha, because Birchas Kohanim is associated with Simcha, and Tisha B'Av is not a day of celebration, so there's a custom to not mention Birchas Kohanim at all. Those are just other examples in the Tefillah where we reshuffle things in recognition of the severity of the morning. So now with that background, with this idea that the Tefillah is trying to capture the nature of the day, let's turn to the text of Nachem. So you have this here on 3 and page 4. My photocopy is not amazing. If you want to look at it, you don't have to look at it, but if you have any translation of Nachem, that's fine too. I'll just mention one thing briefly before we look at the text. If you look at the earliest Sidurim that we have of the Gonim, of Sajagon and of Amram Gon, that go to the last centuries of like the 800s, 900s, Sajagon just writes the following. I have this on page 3. V'yesh mosifin b'tfilas Tisha B'Av b'bonei Yerushalayim Nachem, the Ein Chashash ba'amirasa. Sounds like it wasn't always standard across all communities. Some people add Nachem. There's no problem if you want to say it in your tefillah, but it didn't sound like it was clearly de rigueur in the time of Rav Sajagon. Whether that's significant for the debate about changing the text is something I want to think about at the end. But Rav Sajagon here says that some people add it, there's no problem if you want to be of the constituency that recites Nachem in their tefillah. Okay, so let's look at the text. You could feel free to open a sitter that has the translation. I'm going to use the Koren translation that's published here in the Rav Kinos. So it's on page 4 if you're looking at the thing that I sent out. So we'll just look at the Nachem part. So Nachem Hashem Elokeinu Asaveh LeTzion Vasaveh LeYerushalayim. Console the mourners of Tzion and Yerushalayim. That's easy. Ve'es ha'ir ha'aveila ve'hechareva ve'habizuya ve'hashomema. The city that's in sorrow, right? The city that's mourning. The city that is laid waste. That's a good translation of chareva, right? The city that's destroyed. Present tense. Ve'habizuya, the city that's scorned, ve'hashomema, and desolate. Okay, all present tense. And then the tefillah elaborates. In what sense is it desolate and scorned and laid waste? Ha'avela mibli baneha. So it grieves, or it's mourning the loss of its... This is a bad translation. It says for the loss of its children. Probably means it's mourning without its children. The absence of its children. Right? It's mourning the absence of its children. Vehechareva mim onoseha, that is laid waste of its dwellings. Now Ma'on, I think, is ambiguous. Sometimes the Beis HaMikdash is referred to as Ma'on, but Ma'on could also mean its temples, its palaces, its its towers, like the buildings there. So it's a little ambiguous. So definitely it seems to say Yerushalayim is desolate of its children, but then it may also be saying that it's like not built up. Right, so it's like a destroyed city. And my parents get lost driving to my house, and they get taken through parts of Philadelphia. They're like, "Well, we drove through Gaza to get here." That's chareva mimonoseh. Like they mean like bombed out roads and bombed out buildings. Vehabizuya mikvoda, robbed of its glory. Vehashomema me'ein yoshev, desolate without inhabitants. Okay, so that's all. It's very strong language about the current state of Yerushalayim, all in present tense. And then the rest of it, I think, is less controversial. V'hi yosheves v'rosha chafui, she sits with her head covered. Ki'isha akara shelo yalada. Vayivalu ha'legionos, legions have devoured her. Vayirashuha ovde psilim. That's an interesting question. Idolaters have taken possession of her. That doesn't sound like it's mere past tense. Have taken possession of her. What is that, like a perfect past? So does it mean that they still are in possession of her? By Yatilu es Amcha Yisrael lecharev, they put your people Israel to the sword. That's all true. Are they killed? Fine. And then Yushalayim should weep. Jerusalem should scream out on its Chalaleihem for the people that were killed. And then it talks about Hashem is going to rebuild Yushalayim in fire. And then we say Menachem Tzion Nevone Yushalayim. Okay, so what's the kind of, there's a challenge here, right? When you read these psukim today, it sounds almost, I don't know, when you read these psukim, do you think that this is a good description of the current status of Yerushalayim? Or do you feel funny, strange, saying this when, Andrew, maybe you just spent like a nice vacation, right, in Yerushalayim, and you appreciate that the city is renewed, it's rebuilt, there's thousands of Jews living there, concerts in the streets, right? We'll look at some arguments in a second, but I think when you read the straightforward interpretation of Nachem, it seems inconsistent with the experience you have when you go to Yerushalayim today. And that's the challenge. That's the question that we're going to try to figure out. Does anybody agree with me that you read the text? The text is very descriptive, very concrete, and it just doesn't seem to match the reality that we experience today. Yehuda, do you agree or? Yeah. Well, you jumped to final. You inserted all this ideology there. I just said when you read the text of Nachem, the text of Nachem doesn't say anything about like the base. It says like it's desolate without inhabitants. It says it's in the possession of not idolaters. It says that the buildings are destroyed. Now I get it. You're saying there's some important. A very important building that's destroyed. True. There's, I guess, not all. We're here.
Well, I mean, you focus on it. It's a glass half full. I mean, you focus on the positive, you focus on the negative. Clearly, the description is clearly inconsistent with what somebody experienced.
Right. The question is, when you say Nachem, are you reciting a falsehood? That's the question that started troubling people after 1967.
In terms of the city lacking deficiencies, though, which isn't exactly what you described.
Right.
Are,
right. So if the text of Nachem said, restore Yerushalayim to its former glory. So I would agree with you 100%. Right? There's still what to be desired in the resurrection of Yerushalayim. But the question is, when you read this, do you feel like it's just like you're speaking an untruth? And that really started to gnaw at people after 1967. Like, this is, like, Yor Yerushalayim, it's like the capital of the Jewish people today. Right? Right, that the Beis HaMikdash is still not there.
That's there. Once the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, then it will be fully.
Right, but once you put the spotlight back on Yerushalayim, it's.
Yeah.
It's a little hard. Right. But, well, not just the. Just Andrew's excited. Andrew's excited about the rest. Yeah. Look, it's. It's like just the old city.
The new border. Right.
Right. So you're less excited to go to the old city. That's what you're
saying.
Right. Right. That's going to be a part of right. That's going to be a part of this also.
Yeah.
I feel like when I'm saying Nachem that you're not fully capturing the current condition. Now you might say that's okay. That's excusable. And we'll see what the postgame say about that. But this is the phenomenon that has to be explained. Let's just take Avi and then we'll take Yair.
Is there a precedent in either
I think, but the problem, I think the two were always like, like Yerushalayim was a glorified city when there was political sovereignty, and so the Beis HaMikdash was there.
So they are linked.
Yeah, historically they're definitely linked, right? Today you have this, they're not linked, fam.
I think Yishayahu, right? And then you have like Ruachim, which is like, there's a basic addition, there's problems, there's political strife, there's
right.
There is a middle ground.
Is that what you're asking, Avi, about like the, or you're asking just about the significance of the city separate from Yishayahu?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, yeah. Yeah.
Usually it's attributed to the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, okay. Like the rest of the text of Tfilos.
Right. So
that's, you know, Baish, after Baish.
The Anshei Knesset HaGdola would be thinking that they were just living in Yerushalayim, but there was a story that Mikdash, they were mourning that.
Right, but I think there was like no, there was like a tiny Yishuv, maybe a few people who were left, right? But the city really was desolate for many, like 2,000 years, and then, now it's not. That's the, right, that's.
But did they attribute the holiness of Yerushalayim only to the
That's the question. That's what we're gonna. That's the. That's kind of. So the, we'll see at the end of this year. The Rav makes that move. The Rav makes the move to say that you can't talk about the significance of Yishalayim without the Beis Hamikdash. But we're gonna try to scrutinize that to see if that's compelling.
Say, I think 67, meaning formally, lots of, you know, I guess you'd say politically things change 67, but it takes the culture of two generations to catch up. The city today is very different than 67.
Sure. Sure.
Which is why I think the
Rav's
sort of in the
60s now is a lot less compelling. Ah, okay, good. We'll get to the Rav in a second. I want to hear that point. Yeah,
I think it's so hard that people go to Yerushalayim after they've all returned. It's been like decades. They've been there for the Mishkadosh. I think they only go and ask whether they should stop mourning on Tisha B'Av after the Mishkadosh is built.
That's interesting.
Even though they were there for years, and I assume there was some type of like.
Right.
Yeah. About the time, 20 years of actually
right. For sure, there's a Beis Hamikdash component to it, right? That's an interesting right.
I mean, we'd have to, yeah. Ask that
right. No, for sure, there's a Beis Hamikdash component to it. Like, there is stuff like there were Israelis like who after 48, like
yeah.
maybe there's no reason to talk Tisha B'Av anymore. And I think the very accepted response is like too fast, right? But that's different than the narrow question of the text of Nachem. Is it strange to utter things that are just clearly false about the current condition of Yerushalayim.
Right, but so maybe the problem is that like, they read this in such a way that it was, you know, some metaphysical quality.
I think it's hard to do that. That's why I read through the text, right? Like, I mean, you could darshan it all away, but it says, like, without a children,
yeah.
Right? It's in the possession of Gentiles, the buildings are destroyed, it's shomema, it's desolate. I think those words have very clear meanings, and you have to work very hard to bend them from those meanings.
Shlomo? I was just going to say, the Zachari parallel contrast, the challenge of it is that the Kurban was at that point very fresh. They come at 70 years, where even if people went back to Yerushalayim,
yeah.
Before they, like, it was still fresh. I mean, it was fresher to them at that point in time than the Holocaust is to us now. So
right.
So, I you know, to say, oh, they didn't ask the question until basically it was rebuilt.
That's an interesting point. The history was so fresh.
Yeah.
I think it's a great point. So let's look here. So I'm going to turn here to page 6. And I want to discuss the poskim who weighed in on this question. So we'll look at least four views that were suggested on this. One is from Reb Chaim David Halevi. Reb Chaim David Halevi was the chief rabbi in Tel Aviv. He became chief rabbi in Tel Aviv. I think he succeeded Reb Avadi Yosef. When Reb Avadi Yosef became chief rabbi of Israel. So a very thoughtful and influential Svardi posek. We're going to look at his view. Then we're going to look at Rav Goren's view. Rav Goren was the colorful Ashkenazi chief rabbi. So he has a view about this in his Sefer Chumas HaGoren. Then we're going to look at Reb Avadi Yosef. And then we're going to look at the Rav. So I just want to look at four responses to this question. And we'll see if any of these responses put our concerns to rest. Okay. To change the nusach.
Yes.
Yeah.
They add something
that... Yeah, Rav Goren is the... Rav Goren and Reb Chaim David Halevi did that. So. Yeah, we're gonna talk about that. So let's look at three. Let's look at a few suggestions here. So we're gonna. If you have my source, you can look at page 6. Shit Aseilu Charav. That is Reb Chaim David HaLevi. And I'll just read you the text of the question. So he was asked, now that Tzahal conquered Yerushalayim, now that masses of Jews, throngs of Jews are filling up the courtyard of the Kotel, okay, they're celebrating, is it conceivable, hayitachin, that anachin, which we say in Tisha B'Av, we're going to call Yerushalayim an ir avela shomema bzuya mibli baneha? Look around on Yom Yerushalayim when everyone is celebrating. So like, could the text of Nachim apply to the thing that you're witnessing then? That's the question that Reb Chaim David HaLevi was asked. I don't have a date on this Shaila, but you know, it's clearly sometime after 1967, probably a couple years after, somewhere in that time frame. So Reb Chaim David HaLevi just directly validates the inquirer's question. And he says, this is very interesting, Bezos Sadakta. You're right about this. Gam ani hirgashti b'tisha b'av harishon acharei melchemes sheshes hayam. I felt the exact same way on the first Tisha B'Av after the Six-Day War. She'eineni yochel yoser lomar b'tfilasi dvar mela. It's a very thoughtful and insightful post. He just says, I felt the same way. I'm like, how could I say Nachem? It's just that the text doesn't ring true. Shehem bechinas dover shkarim lefnei Hashem. You're standing there in tefillah and you're lying. You're uttering falsehoods directly to God. So he said, I felt uncomfortable doing that. And he said, and it's not just the case that on Yom Ha'atzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim, that Yerushalayim is in this jubilant atmosphere of celebration. He says, even all year round. He says, in fact, even on Tisha B'Av itself. He says, afilu b'Tisha B'Av. Yom Ha'evel Ha'le'umi. Thousands of Jews come to the Kotel to mourn the Churban HaMikdash. He says, even there I feel like that I get so happy seeing all the Jews come to mourn the Churban. I'll be honest that there's a live stream of NCSY Kolel Kumsitz this afternoon. So my parents aren't NCSY Kolel for 2 weeks. I didn't have a say in it. A little embarrassed about it, but no, I'm just kidding. But they're there for 2 weeks, and you see those thousands of people at the Kotel, like singing kumzitz, and as Reb Chaim David HaLevi says, it's the advertisement says avelos, right? But it's almost like a celebration of like, oh, we're all here at the Kotel on Tisha B'Av. I think that's what Reb Chaim David HaLevi is commenting. That even on Tisha B'Av, he feels like a certain simcha that Jews are able to mourn the Churban here, which they weren't able to do for so many generations. So what does he suggest? This is really fascinating. So, let's see. Yeah, I'll just read you one more quote. He says, Hine ata kisheba adam l'sham afilu b'Tisha B'Av. When a person gets to the Kotel, even on Tisha B'Av itself, Eino yachol shelo lachosh simcha pnimis. It's impossible to not feel that internal happiness. Bir osi hamone beis Yisrael memalem eschatzer hamikdash. To see the Jews gathering. Today the Kotel was packed, like from the Kotel itself all the way up to the buildings on the other side of the chatzer. So here's what he says. He says, look, you could look into the paragraph, v'lachein, therefore, ein safek sheyesh mishum dover shkarim lifnei Hashem. You're lying before God if you recite the text of Nachem Kipshuto in its straightforward text. He says, you can't call Yerushalayim this way. So what he says is, Misiba Zos, this is the paragraph that starts this. He says, what I do is I add one word and I change it to past tense. That's his suggestion. So he says, V'loshanos mila achas benusaf Nachem. Just one word I change, and I say Nachem Hashem Elokeinu as Avei Tzion as Avei Yerushalayim. That's the same we have. Ve'es ha'ir shehoisa chareva, the city that was destroyed, and then that modifier carries over to all the other adjectives in the tefillah. So it's all past tense. It was destroyed. It was desolate. It was without its children. It was conquered by non-Jews. And then I feel comfortable saying Nachem. I think it's a very nice. saying, what are you saying, Nachem?
You provide them with the public.
It's no longer.
Now, you're saying that once you change it all to past tense. Let's see. Yeah, so he throws in a line, right? He says past tense, right? He throws in a line. You know, Yerushalayim was without all its children. Achadayin zekukahi l'necham. It still needs consolation until. And then he cites the last part of the tefillah, which says, "Oh, one day, Hashem, you're going to just like you destroyed Yerushalayim in fire, you're going to rebuild it in fire." So the idea is that like that's the nechama that still needs. So if you think about it in past, present, and future. So the past part is past, like it was desolate, it was. I guess in the present, it's not desolate, but that's why the end of the tefillah pivots towards the future and says, you know, we need consolation until it's rebuilt, which is basically what Yehuda was saying at the beginning of this year. But right, meaning like our ideal for what's going to be is what's powering the tefillah of Nachem. But you do have to change everything to past tense for the descriptions to be factually correct. So I think that's like a very wonderful. You have to change a few other of the tenses in the tefillah, but it's a tiny modification, right? And you solve the problem. So I really like the Reb Chaim David Halevi suggestion. Let's look at another suggestion that's out there. So if you look at page 7 of my source sheet, you have Chumas HaGoren. Those are the chuvas of Reb Shlomo Goren. He was asked the exact same question. He was a little, I don't know if this is more bold or less bold. I think people look at Rav Goren always as being more of a maverick. So maybe I'm colored to think that this was a bolder modification of Nachem. So he writes here in Simen Kuf Chaf Beis, he writes, I already solved this problem. He's like, don't you know? Because in a dispatch to the Chayalei Tzahal, Rav Goren was the Rav Rashi of Tzahal. Before he became the Rav Rashi of Israel. He says, I already sent out a dispatch to Tzahal after 1967 saying that they should cut out the whole middle of Nachem. And he points out that actually in Maseches Brachos, the Gemara says if you're in a rush to get to work or you're traveling and you don't have time to daven the whole Shemon Esrei, you basically just say, Hashiva Shoftenu Kvar Rishona, Mishpat. I mean, what you should do is you should cut out the middle body of all the brachos of Shemon Esrei, have a quick opening, one line opener, and then a quick chasima, a quick closing of the bracha. What's that, Jeremy? You said you. Well, it's not my idea; it's the Gemara's idea. You know, when the Gemara itself seems radical, then we have trouble. Right? But. Well, this is part of the discussion of Havinenu. Yeah, two questions. Is Havinenu you lump everything together, or does it mean you just cut out the middle section? So if Goren says that's the methodology, if someone's in a rush for the tefilos, the set tefillah of Shemon Esrei that we have, so he says here maybe the best thing to do with Nachem is you start off saying Nachem Hashem Elokeinu Asabele Tzion Asabele Yerushalayim, and then just cut straight to the ending. He gives you a few more things saying. We're all bitter because of what we envision for its future restoration. So you should say, Al Kain Siyom Bimar Tichbe, like Zion is crying, Yerushalayim should scream out, Libi Libi Al Chalaleim, we're upset about all the people who died in the Khorban, and Hashem, you're going to rebuild Yerushalayim in fire, Ki Atah Hashem Be'ishi Tzata, and then close with a few more psukim, Baruch Atah Hashem Menachem Tzion, Ebonei Yerushalayim. So that was a suggestion of Rav Goren. I think it's a pretty nice suggestion. Also, it's an interesting question. What does more damage? Changing the Nusach HaTfilah to past tense, like Reb Chaim David Halevi was suggesting, or to bite out the middle of the bracha? Well, yeah. Which one is more heavily editing? You mean cutting out the whole middle? Okay. Yeah. But some people get very worked about change versus deletion. Yeah, because I hear both sides of the position. Now, those are two views about change. Rav Goren himself, actually, you can see here on page 8, you actually have he rewrote the tefillah. I think later he changed his mind a little, so he didn't just cut out the middle, but he actually changed the text. If you want to look at that, you could see on page 8 with the Rabbanut letterhead of Shlomo Goren. And he tried to, more of a tampering, he added in language in this formulation. But we don't need to look at that to complete our survey. I think that if you want to adopt a position, the easiest position of Goren is the one where you just cut out the center text. Now I want us to look at two views that are absolutely opposed towards changing the text. One is Rav Adi Yosef, and the other is the Rav. They both are adamant that Nachem shouldn't be tampered with at all. So you have here on page 9, if you want to look at the Tshuva Yichav Adas, Chedek Aleph Simen Mem Gimel, it's Tshuva of Rav Avadia. The person formulated the question very nicely, again, like Yushalayim is experiencing a renewal, the statements in Aneinu seem false. Thousands of people are singing at the Kotel on Yom Yerushalayim. So Rav Avadia turns to them on page 10, and he says, look, our tefillos were composed by the end of the period of the Nevi'im, the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, together with some prophets. And he said, every letter in the tefillah is composed with such insight and forethought and wisdom that who are we to start tinkering with the text of the tefillah? Which is a very, very reasonable. He quotes the Chida here, who talks about Pi Kabbalah. Every letter has significance. He says it's a big deal to start tinkering with the formulations of tefillah. So I don't think we should change anything at all. And he says, and more to the point, you see here on page 10, he has a little drush to try to interpret away even the statements that seem factually inaccurate. Maybe you could talk about that referring to Karbanos or referring to the Mikdash. I think that's a stretch. I think Rav Adi himself recognizes that's a stretch, but he's making an effort. And he says, look, there's a mosque on Har HaBayis, that maybe that counts as desolation. He talks about there are all these churches in the old city. He says, I can look how much Jewish blood was spilled by the Christian church over the generations. So our enemies are like fortified within Yerushalayim itself. He talks about lack of mitzvah observance amongst Jews in Yerushalayim today. So he says, all these are reasons for us to continue to mourn. He says something that's also, he says, even the shuls that were there are still in a state of destruction. I think he's referring to the Churva shul. Yeah, it was in, it used to be literally bombed out, right? You saw like one little arch that was there for, now the Churva is like a beautiful rebuilt shul. But Raj is clearly referring to this. He says, Kama bate knesa shahayu letif eres amenu b'iratika, odam charevim b'shonmim. So you have to update that one. But look, and you have to figure out once Netanyahu's government expels everyone else from Yerushalayim, you have to figure out these other pieces of Rav Adi's tshuva. But, what? Correct. Yeah, there's no... There are desolate areas. That's definitely true. Right, so Rav Adi is saying that's what we should interpret the tefillah as referring to. I agree. That's exactly what he's saying. Well, we do assert sovereignty over all Jerusalem, right? I mean, that's the idea of united of Yerushalayim Hameuchedes. What? I thought we just recognized the status quo, but officially Israel has sovereignty over Har HaBayis. No. No. Israel has like an arrangement with the Wakaf. You got to read current events stuff. Come on. Now, I think, David, the way I test this, and I think Rav Adi says some things that are unpersuasive here also, he says, even the reason why people are Ola Regel nowadays, he says, why are you Ola Regel? Did anybody here go to Yerushalayim for Yom Tovim? Anybody? He says, why are you Ola Regel? So he quotes the Kafter of Farah, who was like a late Rishon, and he says, people are Ola Regel nowadays, just Laharbos Agmas Nefesh. Just to experience the sorrow of Yerushalayim. I mean, I don't think that's true anymore. People go to Yerushalayim because they feel the sense that they're... Yeah, at least it's not Agmas Nefesh, right. So, I mean, you could see where Ravadi is trying to, he's trying to turn us in that direction. But David, I think the gauge is, like, how much do you celebrate Yom Yerushalayim? So the more you celebrate Yom Yerushalayim, it's a zero-sum game with how much you could accept this position of Ravadia. Right? So the more you think that Yom Yerushalayim is like a very substantial day that altered our sovereignty, control, Reishis Tzmichas Gulasenu, the less easy it is to say, oh, you know, Nachem exists today as it existed at the time of the Churban. But again, Nachem doesn't say anything about Gula. Nachem literally just says the desolate, destroyed.
Right, so over here you take the question.
Right, the topic of my shir, those two words that I chose so carefully that both Shlomo and Avi muttered through when they were announcing the shir. No, I'm just kidding. Those words are quotes from Nachem, right? Like nobody would, if you described Yerushalayim like that today, you'd be canceled as an anti-Semite. Well, you'd be viewed as an anti-Semite for calling Yerushalayim as... Because that's not a description of the city. And I think that's where the tension comes in. Rav Gorin's point and Rav Chaim David HaLevi's point is like a slight modification could make it true. Rav Avadia wants to have his cake and eat it too. Like Yehuda's point, which is like, no, you could embrace Nachem by interpreting it along these lines. Again, I think Rav Avadia is really motivated and he's explicit about this, that he doesn't want to change the Nusach HaTfila. So he's saying, given that I don't want to change the Nusach HaTfila, combine that with there is a way to make sense of it, you could reconcile yourself with this.
Right. I mean, I guess that's for Joseph as well. Like,
I think the answer is that no points until Mashiach comes because he's really motivated by we don't change our Nusach HaTfila. So everything else is really just rationalization to make the we don't change the Nusach HaTfila thing more palatable to us. Now we could embrace that. We could say we don't change our Nusach HaTfila, so it's okay that we get up in our tefila and utter falsehoods. I think that's what you're caught between, right? Either you want your tefila to be like you're only stating truths, in which case you have to bend or cut out a piece, or you'll say like, no, we're anchored to the Nusach HaTfila Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and they must sanction our uttering these things, even though we know them to not be true. That's the central dialectic as I see it. Well, I think v'shlaim yerecha brachim imtashu v'sishkom b'socha kasher dibarta. That's already romantic. That's like the idealization. Uvenei osa b'kar binyan olam. I mean, it should be a construction of eternity. V'chisei David avdecha mehera l'socha tachem. Like, restore the Davidic monarchy. So all those things are so eschatologically oriented that I don't think those are inconsistent with Yom Yerushalayim. It's literally the particular formulation of Nachem that I think.
You could say, what's happening in the course of the last 15 years since the Nachem Shalom, that the game changer, in theory, you could make that argument. So.
Right. Yeah, you could, but I think it's less like to me. That doesn't bother me at all. Like I don't get most things don't trouble me, but. Yerushalayim Yerecha Brachim Tashiv definitely doesn't trouble me. And Aninu, it does, like my antenna, Nachem, the antenna goes up. It's like, it's a little funny to say this after I spent an amazing summer in Yerushalayim, you know, getting so worked up about Kibbutz Galios here. I think it's very hard to have it both ways. So. Well? Oh, so let's get to the Rav. Yeah. Well, we're going to get to the Rav. Yeah, is that what you guys? Yeah, okay, so let's get to the Rav. So the Rav's analysis, you have this here on page 11 of the source sheet if you want to look at it. There are different quotations of the Rav's position. More forceful or less forceful depend who the transmitter of the Rav's Torah is. If you look at the back of this kinos, it's a very forceful formulation of it. If you look at the Mesorah Journal, which is published by the OU, which is really Rav Ganak and Rav Schechter, you get another version of it. I'll just give you, we can look at it inside. But the Rav was super opposed to changing the text of Tefillah. Anecdotally, If you look at the Rav Machzor on the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the Rav's always changing the Nusach HaTfilah. Right, so I was like, the Rav did it, you know, he omitted this, he didn't say this, he didn't say this. And like the Rav comes off as like a huge maverick, right? But then when in cases like this, the Rav's like, no, we don't change the Nusach HaTfilah at all, like it's, you know, it's sick. So I once asked Rav Lichtenstein, like, what's the deal? So he said that when the Rav was younger, he was much more maverick. He's much more like, oh, like, we're going to change the Nusach HaTfilah to make it right, it's got to fit perfectly. He's like, Rav Huttner thought that was crazy. Like, he thought, like, who's this young, like the Rav's like a young whippersnapper, he's going to start tinkering with the Nusach HaTfilah. Like, we don't do that. Like, and then, like, the Rav kind of realized later on that wasn't such, like, he stepped back from doing that. So, it's interesting, maybe that's the way of reconciling. Maybe Avi will tell us that in Boston he said one thing, and in New York he, but here the Rav comes off as very against changing the Nusach HaTfilah. But he doesn't anchor it in Rav Avdi Yosef. Like, he doesn't say, because the Anshei Knesset Sagadola established it this way, we're not going to change it. The Rav, I think, tries to shift the conversation into reconceptualizing what's significant about Yerushalayim. So I'll give you the formulation that we have in the Masorah Journal. So the Rav Schechter, I think this is Rav Schechter or Rav Ganak, probably Rav Schechter. They say, Hayu Elu Shiratsu Lishanos as Nusach Tfilas Nachim. There are people who wanted to change the text of Nachim. There's Rav Goren and Chaim David Halevi. Rav Schechter has another quote about, should you tear Kriya when you see Yerushalayim nowadays? So he says there, like, there's Rabbanim Tzi'irim Be'eretz Yisrael, who say you shouldn't, like, who are saying you shouldn't tear Kriya. And, like, of course, the Rav was, like, you know, opposed to this. So the anonymous put-downs. So we're told, how could you say this? So the Rav said, and they claim that now that Yerushalayim is in the hands of Jews, it's not destroyed anymore. So the Rav says, they say here, Rabbeinu hisnaged l'dvarim b'chol togef. That's the Rav is vehemently opposed to this. Okay. Reason number one, as they say, mipnei she'ein l'shanos as nusach ha'tfilah shenitkan aydei chazal. So in this formulation, the Rav is saying we don't want to change the text of the tefillah. The Ode, and here is the rationale, different from Rav Avdi Yosef's. Right? Like, how do you reconcile yourself with this? So he says this. Kol zman sha'mikdash charuv, af she'Yerushalayim binuya uviyad Yisrael, mikol makom nechsheves Yerushalayim gam li'ir chareva. So long as the Beis HaMikdash is not there, Jerusalem is viewed as a destroyed city. So it's like it's a din, right? It's a halacha that we view Yerushalayim as destroyed. And he buttresses this with the Rambam's view, and Yehuda, this gets to your comment actually in the Mincha Mariv Shir about Kedushas Yerushalayim versus Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, that the sanctity of Yerushalayim is actually very different than the sanctity of Israel. What is the sanctity of Yerushalayim? So the Rav says it is the Kedusha of the Mikdash. The Mikdash has this sphere of influence. It starts with the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it goes out to the Kodesh, it goes out to the Azara, then all of Har HaBayis, and then there's all of Yerushalayim, that's all under the penumbra of Kedushas HaMikdash. That's what the Rav says, Kedushas HaShechina. And he gives a few very interesting examples from the Rambam. So there's a halacha that we don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, that's on Shabbos. There's one exception, that in the Mikdash they would blow. And the Rambam says that they would blow in all of Yerushalayim. So you see the Rambam's assuming that the jurisdiction of the Mikdash applies to all of Yerushalayim. It's the same place. The Rambam seems to say that when the halacha is that you shake lulav all 7 days in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, only in the Beis HaMikdash, but outside the Beis HaMikdash you'd only shake on the first day, all of Yerushalayim had the halacha of the Beis HaMikdash. So if you lived in Yerushalayim, you'd be shaking your lulav all 7 days. So Yerushalayim is under the description of Kedushas HaMikdash. So the Rav points to these examples. The Rambam also says that the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is not batel. Even if the Kedusha of the rest of Israel is batel, it's annulled when Jews go into exile. The Kedusha of Yerushalayim is never annulled because that's the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash, which is always there in Har HaBayis permeating Yerushalayim. So it has that special status even after the Churban. So that all shows that Yerushalayim, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim goes to the Beis HaMikdash. The Rav says, based on this argument, that So long as there's no mikdash, Yerushalayim is considered to be nechereves. It's considered to be destroyed. It's a din. Now, I think that's fine. It's like a nice observation about the essence of Yerushalayim. But I think it's unpersuasive for two reasons with respect to Nachim. The first reason is just like if you read the text of Nachim goes well beyond just saying charuv, nechereves, destroyed. And I think if it just said Yerushalayim is destroyed nowadays, then you can make the point along the lines that, without the Beis HaMikdash, it's not destroyed. The text of Nachim goes much further and says that the children aren't there, the buildings aren't there, shomema, right? Those have meanings in the Hebrew language that are distinct from just like the halachic status of in a destroyed state. Is that
right? It's like, not further, it's completely different.
Well,
it's not even further.
That's right, that's right. I mean, I think like the vort of the Rav really just ignores the text of Nachim, in my opinion. So I think it's a very nice conceptualization, and I think you get the point, like Rav Avadia is saying, that we're clearly missing something, which is why we have Tisha B'Av still. But I don't think it's a compelling explanation of why Nachim should continue to remain in its formulation. So the makom ha-mikdash is, right, the place of the mikdash is, but it's hard to say that for Yerushalayim writ large. Right, the Rav doesn't say that... Interesting. You're saying maybe we should even refocus the reference of Nachim to literally the Makom HaMikdash, right? What about the Jews who go up to Har Bayis now? That's true. But I think you have to figure out if that's a persuasive interpretation of the text of Nachim itself. Now, the second reason why I just think it's not totally compelling to my mind is because of the reason that we discussed at the outset of the shiur, which is when you look at the actual kinos of Tisha B'Av and the language in Eicha, you get the sense that we are mourning Yerushalayim as the loss of political sovereignty, the loss of a city that was this bustling center of Jewish life, separate or independent of the Churban of the Mikdash itself. So I'll just give you a few examples from Eicha. I have these on the bottom of page 11. But they're available if you look at the first paragraph of Eicha. See, for example, Eicha Yashva Vadad Ha'ir Rabasiyam, a city that was teeming with people. Rabasi Bagayim Sarasi Bamadinos, like an officer among nations, Haisa Lamas, was plundered. Right, it became subservient. That's talking about the loss of political sovereignty. If you look, for example, Eicha Perak Aleph Pasuk Zayin, Yerushalayim mourns bin full amah biyad sar, because her people fell captive to an oppressive enemy. Eicha Perak Aleph Pasuk Yud Aleph, kol amah ne'anachim mivakshim lechem. We're talking about the people who are starving on the streets of Yerushalayim. Perak Hei Pasuk Beis, nachlasenu nehepcha lizarim batenu linachrim. Our homes were taken over by foreigners. Parakei pasakei, al tzavarenu nir dafnu, yaganu velohunach. We were persecuted. We were chased by our enemies and we had no place to rest. Parakei pasakes, avadim mashlu banu parek en miadam. Like, servants ruled over us. Eicha Perakei Pasuk Yud Aleph, Nashim B'Tzion Inu B'Sunos Ba'arei Yehuda. The women were oppressed by the captors. Zekene Mishar Shavasu Bachurim B'Neginasam. All these things describe...
One is a retrospective of the war that happened. And the other is a retrospective of the people who were killed. Is there still reason to recall
For sure, but doesn't, I'm saying part of the, a major theme in the Avelos seems to be the desolation of Yerushalayim. Right, I think, and that's kind of what we saw in the bracha being inserted in Bona Yerushalayim itself. So my concern is when you go with the Rav's explanation, you're actually zooming in only on the Mikdash, and you're saying that's why it makes sense, but then you're losing the whole dimension of the Avelos that is front and center in the way we mourn and commemorate Tisha B'Av. That's the, to me, that's like a major problem with the Rav's analysis. Separate from just the text of Nachim itself, focusing on the desolation of Yerushalayim, which is consistent with the whole theme of Avelos of the day. Avi, and then.
But maybe we just have to change our viewpoint a little bit to the way that we think now, based upon the way that they thought then. Like, I think back then, after the Babylonian exile, when they returned, well, the first thing they did in the Kind of Jewish line was they started building the Beis Mikdash, even though they weren't able to complete it, right? But they started putting stones in it, they started putting partitions, you know, in parts of the Beis Mikdash. They felt at the time, it seemed, that the Beis Mikdash was completely linked to the Jewish line, they were one and the same thing. Whereas nowadays, when we took, you know, in 1967, when they took over Yerushalayim, and nowadays, even we don't want to talk about the Beis Mikdash, we know that's not something we assume that the Beis Mikdash would be built for.
You're not attempting to, but there's a lot of money going into rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So.
But there's a different mindset.
Yeah, it depends amongst, you know, but...
Also in Nachim. I mean, Nachim has both extremes. God will drop the...
The Eish. You have Eish Ata Asa Livnosa. Right? Yeah, did you have a comment for I...
Yeah, they're saying, according to the Rav, it's almost weird to even be mourning at all. Like, there's no... According to them, there's no change of the status of Yerushalayim, right? Because it exists regardless of what the misinterpretations are around. Oh.
They do.
Right? There's no change in the status to Arbias and Yerushalayim, right? Even though it's
right, the Kedusha is there. And there's well, the Kedusha Sashchina is there, but the Binyan is not there. So that's the right. That discrepancy is still pretty glaring. Now, you know, just to move towards a conclusion, I want to say two things. The first is my own disposition is, you know, very much raised in this tradition of the Rav, which is like we don't change the Nusach HaTfilah. So we could say, okay, we don't change the Nusach HaTfilah, or at least the later Rav. We don't change the Nusach HaTfilah. And so, okay, that's the cost we have for being very conservative about the stability of tefillah is that we end up saying things that just don't seem right to us. Right? If you asked me last year, that's probably what I've said is the answer, Kipshuto. I think when you look into it more, something along the lines of Reb Chaim David Halevi seems a little more palatable to me. You have a minor modification going past tense, which preserves the pretty much the full text of Nachim. It makes it not false. And I would add to this that, A, the text of Nachim in the Yerushalmi is already different from the text that we have. So there clearly was already different traditions at what the precise text was. And even the discussion of Rav Sajigon, that it wasn't always accepted to say Nachim. So if you're talking about modifying something that's front and center in the nature of the day, I think there's a greater presumption against a small alteration. Given that there's a debate in the Gaonim, given that the text in the Yerushalmi is a little different, maybe there's not a terribly strong presumption against a slight modification like Reb Chaim David Halevi. But I don't have an all things considered. I don't think of an all things considered view. What? That's closer to the Reb Goren type suggestion. But I want to conclude with one final thought, which is the whole concept of Haskaras Me'in Hamora is to capture the essence of the day, the essence of the morning. Right? That's where we start. Like the tefillos are supposed to capture. Now it seems to me, and this relates a little bit to what I spoke about on Shabbos morning, that you have to look at the din through the prism of what you know and like what knowledge is available to you. And I think there's a case to be made here that, yeah, there's a sense in which the Avelos of Tisha B'Av does shift slightly over generations. Like, I think it's very hard to compare a Tisha B'Av if you were living in Varsha during the Holocaust than a Tisha B'Av if you're living in Yerushalayim in 2023. So it makes sense that there's a different, and you might say the text, the Haskaras Me'en HaMa'ora, should reflect that slight shift in the emphasis. Maybe if, for generations, if you were in Europe, Haskaras Me'en Tisha B'Av was about the loss of Jewish sovereignty, being oppressed amongst exiles, together with the loss of the Churban. Today, the spotlight is more on the Churban, the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, the loss of the religious status of the Jewish people. That's what gets emphasized in our Tisha B'Av. And so maybe there's room to say that the Haskaras Me'en HaMa'ora should actually reflect some sort of slight shift in the essence of the Avelus that we experience. In any event, Yiratzon, that we should all experience the binyan of the Beis HaBechira, Bekara B'Yameinu, and we should celebrate Tisha B'Av and Yushalayim as the Yom Tov that the Navi prophesies it to be.